Good to see everyone this morning. Hopefully you can see this board. If not, okay, so my topic is the healing of Jairus' daughter by Christ and the lady who had the blood issue for 12 years. The story can be found in three of the gospel accounts. I have them written up here: Matthew 9, 18 through 26, Mark chapter 5, 22 through 43, and Luke chapter 8, 41 through 56. And I created this table here in case you're taking notes. We're going to read through all the accounts, and it is beneficial to kind of see which things the authors of those accounts decides to mention. So, let's begin over in Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 26, and I'll be asking for volunteers to read so that I'm not the only one talking. Again, I'm not a lecturer, never been a lecturer unless it's to my kids. Then they don't talk back. That's not the right thing. But I want y'all to discuss this. This is a classroom. If I don't have the answer, promised, I will try to find the answer or find someone that knows the answer so that we can get that answer to you. Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 26. If someone would please read that, please.
While he spoke these things to them, behold, a ruler came and worshipped him, saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live." So Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. And suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, "If only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well." But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, "Be of good cheer, daughter, your faith has made you well." And the woman was made well from that hour. When Jesus came into the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the noisy crowd wailing, he said to them, "Make room, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him, but when the crowd was put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went out into all the land.
Okay, who came to Jesus? Let's go ahead and put this down. What's Matthew say? What are the words? A certain ruler, okay? Do we know his name from Matthew? No. I told y'all we were talking about Jairus' daughter, right? So we know it's Jairus, but that's later. Okay. Who interrupted this particular thing? Who, they're on their way to the daughter, who interrupted them?
Woman with an issue of blood.
Okay. Well, why? Because she had the blood issue, right? So fill that in there. What was the result of her healing? What do we see happen immediately after she's healed? I'm sorry? Yeah. What does Jesus do? He continued on his way. He talked to her, said, "Daughter, be of good comfort," right? Thy faith had made thee whole. So what I'd like to point out here is Jesus talked to her immediately. Okay? What is the result of him healing or raising the dead? What happens there? Same thing?
Fame.
Oh, fame. Yeah. It went out, right?
The word got out. Okay.
And the people were astonished, right? Is that one in this passage? I'm having to go back and forth to my notes. They were astonished at his doctor. Okay. Wrong verse. Yeah. The fame went out. Yep. Okay. So let's turn over to Mark. Mark chapter 5. And let's start in verse 22 through verse 43. Mark chapter 5, verses 22 through 43. Whoever wants to pick that up.
And behold, one who was in the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet. Come and lay your hands on her, and she may be healed, and she will live. So Jesus went with them, and a great multitude followed him. A certain woman, and full of blood, came up here, and suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd to touch his garment. For she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed from the affliction. Jesus, knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? But his disciples said to him, you see the multitude following you, and you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see her who had been asleep. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. You will feast and heal your affliction. While he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house and said, your daughter is dead. What trouble the teacher in the focus? And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, he saw a tumult, and those who wept and wailed loudly. He came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but asleep. And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child, those who were with him, and entered with the child in the way. He took the child by the hand and said to her, Talitha, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Immediately, the girl arose and walked. She was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said something should be given to her.
Okay, we're doing the same thing. Who does Mark say came to him? Because I'm Texan, I don't pronounce it correctly. Looking at my Bible, maybe Jairus or something like that. I'm going to say Jairus, okay? It's easier for me. He's dead. He probably doesn't care, okay? Just know that that's what I'm talking about, all right? He came. It also points out that he was a ruler of what? The synagogue, not just a certain ruler, right? We're getting more details. More details. Synagogue you. Right? Alright. Who interrupted? Same, right? Across the board.
It's all the same.
Okay. Perfect. Why? Same thing. Went across the board. Very good. This time what happened when she was healed? The woman.
There's two things. Number one, come and blow the stuff that Jesus felt.
Yes. Jesus felt it. Good. Then what's he do? Right, but he asked his guys, hey, who just touched me? His disciples, right?
Yeah.
Who just touched me? Okay, so we're getting more details. More details. So the difference here is Jesus spoke to his disciples. Before talking to the lady, right? I'm just shorthanding all this so that we have time, because there's a lot to cover here. So now, let's go to the next miracle, the raising of the dead. What differences do we see there as a result of the healing or the raising? What's the differences?
He said no man should know it.
Yeah, he says don't go talk about it. Don't go talk about it. He also says give her some food. Right? Okay. So,
so like somebody else said, he takes the specific equipment sitting with him. He keeps everybody out. He keeps five specific witnesses. Love the Father, and who else? Peter, James, and John.
That's right. That's right.
He said believe, too.
Yep. He did. Both of these miracles have belief in them. We'll find that out as we push it all together from all three accounts. Okay, let's move on. Luke chapter 8. Anything else before we move on? Any other differences we want to talk about regarding these things? Yes, ma'am.
And here, besides the four, or the apostles, in the room, the Father and the Mother.
Right, that's what, yes, yep, you're right though, correct. Yes.
One thing that's interesting is that Matthew just, I guess, he leaves out the part where he had come and said she's near death, and then the other people had come and said she's dead, whereas Mark makes it a point to say that at first when Jairus came, that he said, my little daughter is near death, and others come and say she is dead.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's a difference there. It's actually Matthew chapter 9 says, my daughter even now is dead. So, there's some details skipped there, right? So, we're getting all the details from all the accounts, but yeah, you're right. There's messengers too, we'll see in Luke chapter 8 that come and talk to Jairus, okay? We're all accepting Jairus? Okay. Except for maybe preacher students or something. So, Luke chapter 8, verses 41 through 56. Luke chapter 8, verses 41 through 56.
And behold, there came a man named Jairus. He was the ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house. For he had only a daughter. He had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. But he, as he went, the multitudes thronged him. Now, a woman having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all of her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came from behind and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her flow of blood stopped. And Jesus said, who touched me? When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, Master, the multitudes throng and press you, and you say, who touched me? But Jesus said, somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out of me, or from me. Now when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. While he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher. But when Jesus heard it, he answered and said, do not be afraid, only believe, and she will be made well. When he came into the house, he permitted no one to go in except Peter, James, and John, and the father and mother of the girl. Now all wept and mourned for her, but he said, do not weep, she is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him, knowing that she was dead. But he put them all outside, took her by the hand, and called, saying, little girl, arise. And then her spirit returned, and she arose immediately, and he commanded that she would be given something to eat. And her parents were astonished, but he charged them to tell no one about what happened.
All right.
One thing I do want to mention going along with James here, we added another column somewhere. We put Y here underneath regarding the why Jairus or Jairus came. We could say his daughter is dead, or even to death. Yeah, is dead. Okay. And over here, if we kind of make room here, His daughter is about to die. Okay? And then over here it's the same, but then we find out that she did die before they got there, right? These are not conflicts. Okay, let's just get that out. This is not a conflict here. This is, we're not given all the details. When Darius or Jairus told Jesus she's dead, it could have been that the only thing that Matthew wrote down was a conversation they had after the servant came. Okay? It's not that there's a conflict there. The first word, we don't know if the first words out of his mouth are, "My daughter is dead." Good. You know, okay. And so on and so forth. All right, so let's look at the differences here. Any differences in who came to Luke compared to Mark or Matthew? The same as in Mark, right? Okay, good. We just went over the why. All right, so who interrupted? It's the same, correct? Same woman. So let's move that on over. Why? For the same issues, 12 years of blood. Okay? The result of her healing. Well, we see that what happens, the conclusion of her healing would maybe have been a better way to tap that. What do we see?
We find out that to a certain extent she was trying to hide.
She was trying to hide. She was scared. She's afraid she did something wrong, right, by touching it. Okay? So this is pretty much the same, except we see here that she is scared. Jesus comforts her, right? Okay, what else? What else do we see? Anything there? She's so scared she falls at his feet, correct? Okay, what about the result from the raising of the dead? Is it the same as in Mark, or is it more like Matthew, or is it completely different?
Like Mark.
Like Mark. Okay, so if you're taking notes, maybe this table helped you. Maybe it just looks like chicken scratch and scribble. But yes, sir.
When he was asking who touched me in Luke's account, it says that all denied.
Oh, yeah, his disciples. Yep. Yeah. And the people around him. That's why she was hiding. And then she realized that she couldn't hide anymore because everyone else had said, "Wasn't one of us." So she fessed up and fell at his feet. Right?
Added to that, it also makes a point in Luke that it was Peter that told him, but then the other one that just says that someone had told him.
Oh.
And there it says that Peter was the one that told him that
the multitude
wronged him.
Peter answered Jesus here. So we get a little more detail. A little more detail.
Okay. I fell off the rich into it just a little bit. Being Jesus, did he really not know who had touched her, or is he just trying to?
He's creating conversation. He's trying to get people to think, I believe, and get her to come out to him.
Yeah. He knew who touched her.
Yes.
Being dead. He's trying to get her to come out and say, "Yes, I'm the one who touched you." And I think maybe by then saying, you know, you don't have anything to be afraid of. Be of good cheer.
Yeah. That's right.
Made you whole. Well, he knew it's not a question of did that. That would be us today.
Yep.
You know, we'd go, "Wait a minute, who
touched me?" Right. That's right. That's right. Well, I mean, parallel that to Christianity. We all know that Jesus knows and God knows that we sin, right? It's up to us to go to Jesus for salvation. He's not going to just throw it at us like a dart from Cupid's arrow. You know what I'm saying? It requires an action on our part. And it required an action on her part to confess that, "Hey, it was me. It was me." So,
it says a lot about the woman, because she could have touched him and ran.
Yep.
She could have not come out of hiding because everybody's dying around. She could have just backed off, but she didn't. Now, how hard would it be for a woman to get up in front of everybody and confess she's been bleeding for 12 years?
Oh, yeah, she gives her whole story.
Yeah, she gave the whole story.
Yep.
So that says a whole lot about her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, now we're going to dig a little deeper here. We've kind of touched on some stuff right now, okay, just in a general conversation, but let's get deeper here. Let's focus first on the woman with the blood issue, okay, because we see her healing before we see
the raising of the daughter, right? So let's move on to Leviticus chapter 15. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 12 first. I found Leviticus chapter 12 after I found Leviticus chapter 15, but I needed them to switch. So Leviticus chapter 12. I'm going to start in verse 2. I'll go ahead and read that. It's a short one. I'll have y'all read the long ones. This is the Lord speaking to Moses. We see in verse 1, he says, "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived seed and born a child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. According to the days of the separation for infirmity, shall she be unclean." Okay? So this is after childbirth. Okay? That she is to be separated, not outside the camp. That's not what this is saying. This is separated from relationship with her husband, perhaps, and even contact with others around her. Okay? Now, go back to this time. Go back in this time frame. What do they know about diseases and germs and sicknesses? What do they know? What's the general knowledge of those things? Is it as in-depth as we know now? Definitely not. So a lot of what God commands the people to do when there is disease in the camp is to get away from each other, because they didn't know any better. Okay? They don't have the microscopes that we have to be able to see the germ cells that are causing the issue and then put penicillin on it and so on and so forth. This is a let the body take care of itself away from everyone else so we don't spread any diseases. Now, childbirth is not a disease, okay? But there are issues that can come about with flow from a lady's body after childbirth, okay? And we don't want that to spread if there is a problem there, okay? That's why they're told to get away from people just for a little while. It's for the cleanliness of the whole tribe of Israel. Okay. Now let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 15. Leviticus chapter 15. This deals more with our issue that we have right now, starting in verse 19 through the end of the chapter. Leviticus chapter 19.
"And if a woman has an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days, and whosoever toucheth her shall be unclean until the evening. And everything that she lieth upon in her separation shall be unclean. Everything also that she sitteth upon shall be unclean. And whosoever toucheth her bed shall wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening. And whosoever touches anything that she set upon shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. And if it be on her bed or on anything whereupon she sitteth, when he touches it, he shall be unclean until the evening. And if any man lie with her at all and her flowers be upon him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and all the dead whereon he lieth shall be unclean. And if a woman have an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation. She shall be unclean. Every bed whereupon she lieth, all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her separation. And whosoever she sitteth upon shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her separation. And whosoever touches those things shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the evening. But if she be cleansed of her issue, then she shall number to herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the 8th day she shall take unto her 2 turtles, or 2 young pigeons, and bring them unto the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering, and the other for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her before the Lord on the issue of her uncleanness. Thus shall ye separate the children of Israel from the uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. This is the law of him that hath an issue, and of him whose seed goeth from him, and is defiled therewith. And if her that is sick of her flowers, and of him that hath an issue, of the man, and of the woman, and of him that lieth with her that is unclean.
Okay, so the first few verses that Mathis read have to do with the general cycle. Okay? And so 7 days unclean. By that time, the flow has stopped, okay? And can be and the lady has permission from God to return back to everyday life. All right? And we understand as we read that she's to be separated from people in general as far as physical contact. Her, if someone touches the items that she has either worn or sat on or laid in, they are unclean and they have to bathe and wait to get amongst people until the evening time. Why do you think that is? Why wait till the evening time?
Begin to have a new day.
Okay. Possibly.
Normally, if you wait a certain amount of time, you'll be able to tell if you're actually sick.
Boom. Nailed it. That's what it is. I mean, think about it. They don't have blood tests, right? They can't see if they're sick. They can't do a mucus swab, right? So we wait. We're just going to wait until the evening to see if anything happens to you. If your arm falls off, we know something's wrong and you need to stay away, right? But generally, if you just give an illness enough time, it'll present itself. So, think about if you were the person who's friends with this lady, would you want to be around her in a normal situation? We're just talking normal. No, because you're scared about potential disease, right? You know that God has said stay away from her. You have two reasons right there that are very severe as to stay away. Okay? So, probably not the happiest time for the lady being separated for 7 days from her family and friends. Having to watch everything that she touches, having to sleep on a separate bed so that the bed that she normally sleeps in doesn't become unclean, so on and so forth. But then, as we continue on, verse 28, but if she, I'm sorry, not 28, 25, and if a woman have an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation. So, if this woman is a practicing Jew, or if her friends are practicing Jews, she hasn't had true physical contact with any of them for 12 years. Can you imagine? Let's say that this happened when she gave birth to a child. Okay? And it becomes very difficult to be around that child legally in God's law, right? And emotionally because of God's law, right? She knows she has a problem too. She doesn't want to give that to somebody else. For instance, if I know that I'm ill, I don't shake hands with people, right? I don't want anyone to get sick because of me shaking hands. That's just a pleasantry. We can wave. We can say good morning and get the same effect out of it as a handshake and not pass on germs. And I hope that you would do the same thing for me or my children or my wife or whoever it may be. So this lady has separated herself most likely from daily life contact with other human beings for 12 years.
Can you imagine what the reaction of the crowd could have been when they found out what her malady was?
Oh, yeah, some of them.
She had to have been in the crowd.
Yep.
To touch Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Very true. Very true. So, now we probably have people, when she's talking about it, taking a step back. Yes, sir.
This brings up a larger issue that we haven't discussed yet, and that is the introduction of all the traditions and the rabbinical interpretations due to all these laws. You made speculative suggestions to the health and so forth. That's just what it was. It was just speculation. They were given guidelines. The guidelines were kind of be kept. But they were neither to add to nor subtract from the Word of God. But over the years, 1,500 years, from the time the law of Moses was revealed, to the time we get to Christ, there were volumes and volumes of rabbinical, interpretive commentary on what all this meant. And that's the key, where Jesus says multiple times, you do in vain try to worship me, teaching for doctrines and commandments of men. Well, again, they didn't have microscopes, they didn't have all that stuff that you're talking about, but there were measures, general seven-day measures, roundabout measures that gave time to allow disease and so forth to perhaps come to the head. But they were, again, so paranoid because of the speculation of what actually was going on that they became very suspicious. Well, that mindset was prevalent, and even is today with people that are ignorant of it.
Oh, yeah.
It creates a lot of suspicion, so that adds into what's going on, I think.
It definitely does, and it's kind of like, I don't know, book, chapter, verse on my top of my head right now, but where Jesus said, who wouldn't help his neighbor on a Sabbath day when his ox falls in a ditch, right? It's like, you can't be so stubborn and so that you won't help your neighbor, then you're in conflict with this commandment over here to help your neighbor.
They were struggling to balance.
Yes.
One extreme to the opposite, you know, and we do that today still.
Oh, yeah.
Extremes.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, very true. It could be a lot worse than what we know was practiced at the time. Is another thing, too, as he was pointing out, because there's, he said, volumes of speculative type, you know, commentary. Yes.
I think another thing to point out is she had rarely been able to touch anyone, but when she actually was in the presence of someone, it was a medical person who could not tell her what was wrong with her.
Right, the physicians couldn't even help her.
So it basically is like that she can actually talk to people, but the people that talk to her can't tell her what's wrong. So that would add on to, well, there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but until I can find out what it is, I don't get to see anyone, I don't get to touch anyone. I just get to keep on hearing, we don't know what's wrong.
That's right. That's right. We got to move on because I'm almost out of time. I haven't even touched the other one yet. So here's some. My next point was going to be physicians couldn't even help. Very good. Thank you, James. Way to cover that for me. If you look in, I believe it's in Luke's passage, he says, thy faith had made thee whole. Jesus says that to the lady. This is used here. This type of wording is used here. It's also used in Matthew chapter 17, verse 19, with the 10 lepers that Jesus healed. I'm not going to go read that stuff. If you want to put down your notes, it's also used with the blind man that was healed in Matthew chapter 18, verse 42. The exact phrase is not used in these passages, but the same idea is used with the healing of the centurion's servant in Matthew chapter 8, verse 13. And the possessed daughter of the woman in Matthew chapter 15, verse 28. And why this is interesting is because these people didn't believe that he could heal back at their homes and miraculously the person was healed, right? It took belief that created an action for them to go to Jesus. Parallels with Christianity today. Okay, how many Christians believe in Jesus and sit at home every Sunday and they don't worship him? They don't worship God. Okay? How many in our society do we know proclaim Christianity and they have never gone to Jesus? Okay? These people, when Jesus said, thy faith had made thee whole, these people took action. Okay, so ammunition for anyone that's having a debate on belief only as a way of salvation. Okay, you can use that. Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 2 states that faith gives us access to Christ and the grace of Jesus, the grace of God. Without faith, we know it's impossible to please him, okay? So we're not discounting faith or belief. We're just saying there's more to it than what society wants us to think. And that's not society. That's the devil. That's what that is.
Well, this is also before the cross.
Well, it is. Yes.
And so yeah. He demonstrates his power to save on earth more than once.
Oh, yeah.
And he was all, you know, active.
In Luke chapter 6, verse 19, it reads, "And the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him, and he healed them all." This was not the first time, or it may have been the first time, but this is not the only time that we know that people just wanted to touch Jesus to be healed. Okay? It's a common practice. It appears to be in Luke chapter 6, verse 19. So, virtue left his body when people had the faith to go touch his garment to be healed. Or power. Virtue, power, depends on your translation. Okay, so let's move over to the daughter, the raising of the daughter. Who can tell me what a synagogue is?
Basically, it's the equivalent of our assembly here today.
Perfect. Does anyone have an idea of why they came into existence?
When they were in captivity.
When they were in captivity, that's right. The temple was inaccessible, so they had to worship somewhere. They created synagogues. What would the ruler of the synagogue do or be? Well, I'll tell you because I looked it up. And I don't know if this person's entirely correct, but I read several commentaries, and this is the idea that, you know, if you put them all together, that he took care of the physical arrangements in the synagogue services that came to building, contents, and worship. He made sure that everything was presentable, everything was ready to go, so when people came to worship, they could worship God. It was not determined that he led the worship. I couldn't find anywhere where anyone would agree upon that. So, for all instances and purposes, I feel comfortable saying that he took care of the physical aspects of making sure that the Israelites could worship God in the synagogue. He had some responsibility. Therefore, he wasn't an attendant either. He had attendants underneath him. He was a ruler, so he was the manager, so to speak, to make sure. So this was not just a common man. He's probably viewed with much reverence and respect in the community. And here he is begging Jesus for help. Right? Was that common amongst the Jews? We read about the Jewish multitudes all coming to Jesus to beg him for help, or was it more to laugh and scorn at him? Right? So he, you know, safe to say that he was not the norm. Okay? All right. Mike wanted me to touch on the coincidence that, that's the right word, where the lady had been suffering for 12 years, the daughter was 12 years old, both of these miracles happened on the same day and in the same passages. So I looked up what the symbolic meaning of the number 12 is, because we know that everything that's written in the Bible is written for a reason. And many commentators have developed that 12 is a perfect number, symbolizes the completeness in God's power and authority. Okay, so here we see Christ's power, right? Heals a woman, been afflicted for 12 years, raises someone from the dead. Very good reason to have the number 12 written down, right? They didn't have to include that, but they did. That's because usually when we see the number 12, it is either in completeness, like in ruling, like the tribes of Israel, you know, government agency, or in showing God's power and authority. Some interesting facts on the number 12. It's found 187 times in the Bible, 22 in Revelation. The meaning of 12 I just told you that was a perfect number, or considered a perfect number. Jacob had 12 sons. Ishmael also had 12 sons. Didn't know that. That was pretty neat, or I'd forgotten it. God specified 12 unleavened cakes of bread be placed every week in the temple on the Sabbath day. It's Leviticus chapter 24. Christ called and chose 12 apostles. Okay, we see the number 12 over and over and over again. I have three pages of the number 12 if we want to go over each one. But it's just interesting. Okay, one that I found was interesting was there are 12 names in the Bible that have only two letters. A-I-R-Ed-Er-Er, No-Og-On-Pay-So, another Er with a U, and Uz. In case you want to know, this is a Bible class, so you can pick up on some interesting facts. Probably wouldn't have mentioned it in the sermon, but Bible class, interesting.
It was evident that the Spirit died.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And God knew it. She was in it, and He brought it back. He brought it back alive.
Oh, yes, yeah. She's definitely dead. This girl is dead. Her spirit has left her body.
Your spirit goes to God.
Right. Her spirit has left her body because I believe it's in Luke where it says that He brought the spirit back into the body. Maybe in Mark. Okay. We see that in Luke chapter 9, verse 49, this is the very end we're going to touch on, that something delays Christ from getting to this young lady. Very similar to what we see in with the raising of Lazarus. He stayed 2 days, allowed Lazarus to die. Okay? He probably could have made it to Lazarus and kept him from dying. But why do we know that happened? It's in Luke chapter 9, verse 49. Why do we know that Jesus allowed Lazarus to die? Well, I write down the wrong verse. I think I may have. Oh, John 11:6. Sorry. John 11:6 is where that's found. Has the bell rung?
Yeah.
It did ring? Okay. And it's in verse 4, sorry. This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Okay, it's for the glory of God that Jesus allowed Lazarus to die. Very coincidental, you can say, that He allowed the girl to die. He allowed this woman to slow him down enough to make an example. There's the bell. So that He could show the glory of God and the power of God. Real quick. Why only Peter, James, and John went with him, besides the parents? They were also only allowed when in the Transfiguration, okay? And they were also only allowed in the Garden of Gethsemane. So when Jesus was showing great, huge power, He wanted them there, and in great sorrow for comfort from them, He had them there. Very close to these three men. We know that all three of them were very bold, that John and James were the sons of thunder, right? Peter was always bold, sometimes to a fault. And when you're around bold people, you get confidence. Yes, sir.
Chad, if I could throw this in real quick. I think it's interesting that when Jesus went into Jairus' house, he's told people the girl is not dead, it sleeps.
Yes, sir.
Okay. But when He tells the apostles Lazarus sleeps, they didn't understand. He said he's dead.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would be a good study. I don't know if there's something there.
We were going to touch on that a little bit.
That's interesting.
But you're right. Thank you for pointing that out. Time does not permit to touch on that. But we do read that when Jesus said that, everyone laughed at Him. And laughed Him to scorn. So ridicule is what everyone read. But I don't think that presents how much they laughed at Him. Anyways, thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. I had a good time. Hope we all learned something. And class dismissed. Thank you.